Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, February 26th. Rosary Castro Ortega retired from nursing in 2017, but when the pandemic hit last year, she decided to pitch in and help. Rosary passed away from the virus on March 29th, 2020. She was the first healthcare worker in Los Angeles County to die from COVID-19, according to Kaiser Health News. Rosary was Filipino-American, and though she was first to pass away in her county, she was hardly the last Filipino-American to pass away in the United States from COVID. Filipino-Americans make up 4% of nurses in the U.S., but account for almost a third of the nurses who have died from COVID-19 nationwide. Joining me now to discuss their reporting on how Filipino-Americans came to work the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic so much and why they've been disproportionately affected by the virus are Tracy Hunt, correspondent for The Experiment, a new series from The Atlantic and WNYC Studios, and Gabrielle Berbe, who is the associate producer for The Experiment. The new episode is called The Sisterhood. Tracy and Gabrielle, welcome to the talk show side today. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. This is so exciting.
Hi, thanks, Brian.
And the statistic that you're reporting is based on Filipino nurses are 4% of nurses in the U.S., but account for nearly one-third of the nurses who have died from COVID-19 nationwide. It's so devastating. Tracy, how much do we know about why nearly a year into the pandemic?
You know, this is, I think, a question that a lot of people are looking at right now. There's actually a group of Filipino academics and activists and researchers who are trying to, like, break apart this data. But it's kind of a combination of a lot of, like, just sort of historical factors. I mean, there's the fact that, you know, like in New York and New Jersey and L.A., those were the parts of the country that got hit the hardest with COVID-19. And those are also the parts of the country where a lot of Filipino nurses are concentrated. And then you add in the fact that Filipino nurses are also concentrated and what they like to call bedside care or critical care. These are the nurses who are like, you know, helping you go to the bathroom, taking, you know, making sure you're getting your medicine, who are, you know, coming into your room, you know, to check on you and that sort of stuff. So they're just like very, very close to you. And so if, you know, and at the time, I think when Rosary died, the hospital that she was working at hadn't organized out like a COVID unit or a COVID floor. So people were just coming in. So it was a lot harder to actually, like, you know, separate out they hadn't begun to do that process of separating out which patients had COVID and so on and so forth. And then you have Filipino nurses who were mostly doing this kind of work. And then on top of that, there just wasn't, we all know this, we've all seen these like viral videos from nurses a year ago talking about the fact they didn't have proper PPE, that they had to reuse their mask and so on and so forth. But a lot of Filipino nurses that we talked to kind of talked about this cultural thing of not wanting to rock the boat or like speak up for themselves. And so when they were getting this bad PPE, they weren't like necessarily raising a fuss about it or something. So it's like all these kind of factors that just sort of made this devastating statistic happen. And, you know, and it's something that people are still looking into and trying to better understand.
Gabrielle, the recent episode of The Experiment aims to answer why so many nurses, most of them women, left the Philippines to work in the U.S. healthcare system. And it really begins in the late 1800s, at the end of Spain's colonial rule, when the U.S. came in. So take us back to that moment in time. We're going to play a clip in a minute from your piece, but take us back in that moment in time. What did that transition to quote-unquote independence after the Spanish-American War look like?
Yeah, so it actually wasn't I don't know if I would consider it independent. You know, the Philippines, after the Spanish-American War in 1898, it became a colony of the U.S. So, you know, it joined the ranks with Guam and Puerto Rico. Yeah,
that's what I said, quote, unquote.
Yeah, to become a colony. And the United States, when they came in, they said, you know, we're going to be different from Spain. We're going to do colonialism differently. They actually didn't even call it colonialism. They called it benevolent assimilation. We're going to, you know, benevolently assimilate the Philippines into the United States. And part of that benevolent assimilation meant bringing healthcare and education, Americanized healthcare and education to the Philippines. So part of that was also to, like, civilize Philippines. So benevolent assimilation was like, we're going to civilize the population, we're going to the Filipino population, we're going to incorporate them. So they brought Americanized healthcare to the Philippines. They set up schools taught in English, nursing schools taught in English, and started to train, like, a lot of Filipino women in particular, because, like, bringing U.S. gender norms also to the Philippines, you know, in the U.S., a lot of women are nurses. They bring they build these Americanized nursing schools in the Philippines, and they start to train Filipino nurses in Americanized nursing. And these classes are, like, taught in English, and it's in an American educational framework.
And part of that assimilation effort, the so-called benevolently, having people benevolently assimilate, quote unquote, was bringing Filipinos into the healthcare system. And I see you spoke with Catherine Choi, a professor of ethnic studies at UC Berkeley, a Filipina herself, who wrote the book Filipino Nurse Migration. So let's take a listen, 38 seconds, to how she phrased that initiative.
And they pointed to the presence of disease and quote-unquote primitive, dirty, uncivilized ways of Filipinos. The Philippines needed Americans to colonize and uplift them, specifically through the lens of healthcare. They established nursing schools and actively recruited Filipino women specifically, and actively discouraged Filipino men from entering the profession.
Gabrielle, after the setup that you gave to that clip, anything you want to add after it, nursing as a tool to assimilate or colonize, anything on that additionally?
No, I guess the only thing that Kathy mentioned when we spoke to her was that, you know, even though the U.S. like would then kind of use this wealth of nurses in the Philippines to bring them to the United States, they really did train. The intention was really to, like, train Filipino nurses in Americanized healthcare for the Philippines, serving the Philippine population. So I guess that's one thing that I would add to that.
And Tracy, Filipino nurses were being trained in U.S. hospitals for decades, but the demand for Filipino nurses really shot up in the 1960s. And I think your report says partly because of feminism.
Yeah, that was, like, kind of a surprising part of it. And I mean, and I guess it makes, like, a certain amount of sense. You know, after World War II, more women going into the workplace, you know, a lot of women were a lot of American women were sort of like, you know, we can do other things than be nurses, you know, and, you know, when they became more interested in other kinds of professions. And so that's one reason why the U.S. was having nursing shortages. And when they were trying to figure out, you know, where can we recruit from as far as, like, bringing nurses from other countries? I mean, the Philippines was just waiting. You know, you have nurses trained up to American standards. They speak English. That was just like kind of like the best place to go, it seems, for a lot of recruiters at the time.
Now, this podcast episode is centered on the experience of a group of friends who have known each other since college. It's a group of six women. The time is the 1970s. The place is Manila, the Philippines. Let's take a listen. First, we'll hear Nora and then Joyette in this clip.
check each other. Oh, did you finish studying this? Did you finish studying that?
We would pretend to be reading in the library, but we would all be napping.
When it came time to pick a profession, they all looked at each other.
What are you going to be? And she said, I don't know. What about you? I don't know.
And they kind of just picked nursing.
It wasn't this strong desire to be a nurse. It was sort of a, I fell into it kind of thing.
And this group of Filipina nurses lost their friend very early on in the pandemic. Let's take a listen to another excerpt about what that experience was like with a very powerful and emotional clip where Joyette talks about what that was like when she got a call from her friend's daughter. And listeners, this is about 1 minute long, and a heads up for anyone who might feel like you don't want to hear about a COVID death, maybe come back to us in about a minute and a half.
She said, Mom's not going to make it. We're sending voicemail clips to say goodbye to Rosary. And that was the hardest. That was the hardest to do.
Yeah.
You had to compose yourself to say something to a machine in order to be played over the PA system into her room, because there was no one in her room. No one. How fair is that? It infuriates me. It infuriates me when we get to the political situation of it. Whether or not she was Filipino and she was at risk to begin with, whether or not there was, you know, the preference to put the Filipinos up front. You know what? That's water under the bridge now. She's gone. She's gone.
So, Gabrielle, I want to go to the issue in that clip. Joyette is speculating on whether there was a preference to put Filipinos up front. Can you talk more about what these nurses were telling you in regard to that?
Yeah, so Kathy, when we talked to Kathy, the historian, you know, one thing that she talked to us about was how historically, through these waves of Filipino migration to the United States, Filipinos have been recruited to frontline positions within hospitals. And this is like a historical trend. And we see the highest concentration of Filipino immigrants, Filipino nurses in critical care, acute bedside care positions. So these nurses are, you know, today and historically have been recruited to be put in these frontline positions.
Let's take a phone call. Here is Lourdes in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Lourdes.
Hello. Just a quick, short comment. I don't want to gloss over the fact that the United States did take over a country that had just won its independence in a hard-fought two-year revolutionary war. It was a new nation when those ships under Dewey sailed into Manila Bay. So.
Yes, you want to make sure that, and I think we did discuss that a little bit explicitly before. But Lourdes, do you want to go on for one more thought about how that affected the country, the people in the country at that time, or even ripple down to affect people who then come to this country?
I think that I actually want to speak to the fact that this is sort of a myth in the United States that they are not colonizers, and they were.
Lourdes, thank you very much. Joining us now for a few minutes is Gertrude Tan, a nurse in Los Angeles County who was featured in this episode of The Experiment, and she was a close friend of Rosary Castro Olega. Gertrude, thank you very much for joining us for a few minutes.
Pleasure. My pleasure.
What would you like to say either about your friend or about the story? Maybe you've heard the whole piece now that you're a part of.
You mean as far as how I got to meet Rosary or my opinion about it?
Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yes, I met Rosary with the group of six women through one of the parties. Actually, I was already working with her prior to that, but because she worked a different shift, there was not much close relationship with her. But through the years, as we socialized with her, we got to know her, and actually we became very close to a point that I even got her as one of my godparents to one of my children. She was a nurse that worked in the med-surg unit or medical surgical unit. Very nice, she loves her patients. She has a twin, Rosalie. She worked in the same hospital where I worked, and then after several years, she retired. But during the pandemic, there was an increased need for nurses, and she helped, and that's how she got the disease. And this was devastating to most of us because we loved her dearly. She was like she was the seventh person in that group. Hmm. We didn't know what to do. We could not even get to the hospital. We could not even talk to her. We were only getting communications via her daughter and her twin sister. And she died. And that was a big blow to us because our hands were tied. We couldn't even take care of her. We are nurses, and we're supposed to be taking care of friends and family. We can't even get a hold of her.
Tracy, you want to pick this up? You want to ask Gertrude anything?
Yes.
Oh, Gertrude, so nice to hear from you again. I was just so struck when you were making that point about we're nurses and we couldn't even take care of her, and I think that's like just that one of the hardest parts of this whole of this disease is that it like gets in the way of like normal human behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know that you retired. I know that you retired before the pandemic started. I was curious, like, do you remember, like, were you hearing from a lot of other Filipino nurses who were in your age group or cohort who were thinking about going back to work?
Actually, no. I am still employed. I believe you're talking about the other nurse that retired. Yeah, that's fine. I work, but I'm no longer at the bedside, but currently I'm off because of a medical leave of absence. Mm-hmm. Now, most of us have retired, but myself and another nurse. The other person does not see herself retiring. The others are scared. Mm-hmm. Of going back, who would not be scared? Mm-hmm. We are both vulnerable. We are at that. We're over 60 and we have medical conditions. Mm-hmm. How could you, and my hat's off to those who are still working despite their vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, come on, let's face it. Why do you want to be on the front line at this time? My children are. They are on the front line, but they're young. But now we know that it affects everyone, not just people with diabetes, not just people with comorbidities. Yeah. I mean, it's still scary. We know we have the vaccine, but we still have to keep our guards up, right?
Yeah.
Gertrude, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes today. This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. We're almost out of time with Tracy Hunt, correspondent for The Experiment, the new series from The Atlantic magazine and WNYC, and Gabrielle Berbe, who's the associate producer for The Experiment. This new episode is called The Sisterhood, and of course you can listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. Listeners, one scheduling heads up, Mayor de Blasio will be on at 11:30 this morning. We'll talk about the departure of the school's chancellor, Richard Carranza, and the person the mayor has already named to replace him, and much more. But hold your mayor calls till 11:30. Mayor de Blasio coming up at 11:30 this morning. And Tracy and Gabrielle, just to finish up our segment, you both say in the podcast that, Tracy, that you're an immigrant, and Gabrielle, that your family is from the Philippines. I'm just wondering how you came away from this reporting, kind of maybe even more personally informed than you were, Gabrielle?
I have a lot of healthcare workers in my family, and nurses and doctors from the Philippines. So this did feel, and I guess I never really like stopped to ask why I had so many that worked in healthcare, and this piece kind of allowed me to ask that question and explore that and interrogate why. Part of our show is like kind of looking at how these larger historical forces like shape our everyday lives, and I feel that that was something that like I, as much as we reported in Rosary Story, that's something that I felt within my family. So it was, it was this kind of personal revelation in a way.
Tracy, a final thought?
Yeah. My mom is, she's a radiation therapist, so not a nurse, but she was recruited from the Caribbean to come to the United States to, you know, fill this sort of healthcare worker need. And one thing I kept thinking about, especially as I was talking to all these Filipino nurses, was that they had, you know, I kept coming back to the thought of like, what do we as a country like owe these immigrants who are now dying so disproportionately, trying to keep us all safe? And I think that that's something that we, you know, really have to sit with and think about. And I think we also have to like think about like what this does, how this like reverberates and affects other countries as far as like, you know, us bringing in nurses, and how does that affect like nurse shortages in other countries. So it made me think about nursing in a much more global, sweeping way than I hadn't before.
And Tracy, you want to just say something about this new series in general that you're working for? A lot of our listeners probably don't even know that this exists until hearing it in this segment. So it's The Experiment, a podcast series from The Atlantic magazine and WNYC.
Yeah, so our tagline is Stories from an Unfinished Country. I think the way we've been thinking about it is how these sort of big historical things impact and, you know, intersect with people's ordinary lives. And I think this nurse story is a really great example of that, because like the history of how Filipino nurses are like in LA in the first place is like such a big, you know, it's such a historical complicated reason. And so I think those are the kinds of stories that we'll be doing. And yeah, it's going to be great.
Good luck with it, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
And thanks both of you for coming on.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.